This podcast is brought to you by Homul Casino Resort, the player's place.
Men of Woods brought to you by David P. Shapiro, criminal defense attorneys, helping good people regain control of their future when charged with a crime since 2010. Visit DavidPShapiroLaw.com. All right, let's go backwards in time through the weekend. We just wrapped up the Padres 5-0 win over the Guardians yesterday. Yeah, neither you nor I watched a ton of Saturday's game, and I don't think we missed much.
I can actually wrap it up for you in about 8 seconds.
Yeah. One run on, let's see, one hit. That's all we got. One
we
damn
no
hit.
Runs, right?
You can't say damn.
Oh, we got one.
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
Manny Machado, double play, ground
double
out.
Double play, ground out. That's right.
Scored the run in the first inning.
Yeah,
classic,
we go.
Classic.
Padres on roll. They're up 1-0. And that was it against Joey. Is it Cantillo or Cantillo? I thought it was Cantillo.
Everyone says Cantillo.
And then I heard a couple people saying Cantillo over the weekend. Whatever it is.
People like to get fancy sometimes. I do think it's Cantillo.
And even Craig Stammen acknowledged it again. Yep, Padres revenge tour game somehow. Joey said, I didn't care. It was good to see like some familiar faces that I had remembered playing with in the past. Just a couple of guys left, really. But he was sharp, though. When I went back and watched the recap, the guy was sharp against the San Diego Padres. A lot of off-speed stuff, which we also saw on Friday, but I don't know if that was a strategic decision or just what was working for him, but Joey Cantillo was excellent. The Padres did pull off a very nice cutoff play in the bottom of the first inning to limit the Guardians to just one run against Wandy Peralta. And if you want to dive into something on Saturday's game, the decision to use Wandy as the opener there. Which, left-handed lineup, you know, left-handed Wandy. He had been effective as an opener a few times in the past, but let's be clear. Wandy has not been good since he went on the bereavement list and came back. Don't know if the two are connected. Could be completely unrelated. But Wandy has struggled in the last 25 days or so. He has given up runs in most of his appearances. And you put yourself maybe in a bad situation counting on Wandy Peralta there. Then they went with Kyle Hart. The next inning, he had been really, really good, but gave up a run, and that was it. Padres were behind and never came back before they even got to Randy Vasquez. Their bulk guy kind of put him in a bad situation there where you enter the game trailing, so you feel like you got to be perfect. He wasn't. You know, he got five innings under his belt, but seven hits, four earned runs. Did only walk one and struck out five. I didn't think Randy was terrible. Didn't get some help from his defense there in the the seventh inning when they had the steal, double steal, and everyone came around to score. But, you know, it didn't matter at that point since the Padres were doing absolutely nothing offensively. But definitely second-guessed maybe the decision to go with Wandy is the opener in that game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, pitching chaos is pitching chaos for a reason. It's because the starter whose turn it would be in the rotation has not been super effective, even though Randy has pitched a little bit better as of late, Ben. I just don't know what you do. Now, the good news is, if and when you get to the playoffs, it's a non-issue. Right, that you don't need a 5-man rotation. You don't really even need a 4-man rotation, really. I mean, You piece a game together, and it probably won't be that group of guys that gets it done. So kind of a necessary, like if it all kind of worked out perfectly in a loss, didn't hit the ball a lot. You know, you got thrown out on the base paths. It wasn't a clean game at all, but you didn't have to go to anybody really. I'm not saying of value, but of note.
Nobody Griffin of note. Cannon got his inning in.
He got his inning, scoreless inning.
You know, will it be his last though? With Joe Musgrove pitching on Friday as rehab start for El Paso, you know the numbers were a little iffy: 9 hits and 5 runs, but 70 pitches, velocity was good. Joe seemingly coming out of it feeling good. There is a chance that spot in the rotation, the Randy Vasquez day, could be where Joe Musgrove returns later this week.
Does it ever work out perfectly like that for Padres fans? I don't feel like it does, but I'm sure hoping that that's exactly what happens.
I've got tickets for Friday's game, so if we can just schedule it.
That would be great.
I think it maybe lines up close to then.
Yeah. It could. Yeah, absolutely. Would be a potential day for Joe to come back for the San Diego Padres, or he maybe gets one more rehab start and then comes back the following week. But he is closing in on what will be a pretty big moment for the San Diego Padres and fans to see Joe back on the mound again. I assume, I don't know how effective Joe's going to be after 2 years off, returning to the major league level. I know emotionally it's going to give everybody a lift.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
fans, players, coaches, everybody to see Joe back on the mound.
Him
in
running
the big
out
leagues.
Of that dugout will be a moment.
What a moment that will be. I mean, the standing ovation is going to be unending. You're going to have to delay the start of the game.
La, da, da. Oh, dude, I got goosebumps. Thinking about it. It'd be awesome.
So it seems like we're getting very close to possibly seeing that moment, whether it comes this week or not. I have not heard any decisions yet from the San Diego Padres. All right, back to Friday now. The series opener. As the Padres took a 5-game winning streak into their series against the Cleveland Guardians with Michael King on the mound. And, of course, he immediately falls behind early. Solo home runs by Nathaniel Lowe, Brian Rocchio. He's down 3-0.
How about that lineup that voter, Stephen Vogt, threw out there?
Lefty, lefty, lefty.
Lefty, lefty, lefty. Like, oh, man. I mean, mentally, you're pitching, you're like, whew, okay. Not a righty in the mix tonight. All 9 lefties. And, yeah, if you leave it over the middle for some of those guys, Benny, which he did, they're going to tattoo you, and that's what they did.
But in, you know, there was a certain segment of the season where the Padres are down 3-0.
Toast.
Feel like the game's over. But this is not that segment of the season. Even against Gavin Williams, who is one of the best pitchers in the American League. And that is why what they did to me was so remarkable on Friday. Xander Bogaerts takes a kind of a hanger and just crushes it.
Again, an answer. He answered
top of the fourth.
After, you know, they put up runs. And it's that they've been doing this recently where, you know, it's just getting that one run back is just such a jolt.
And this was a 2-run shot. So you're down. Yeah. Now it's 3-2. Now 3-2. You feel like you basically, it's a toss-up game again. And then Fernando, 115.5 miles an hour off the bat in the top of the fifth inning, down the line. Just a classic Fernando shot to tie the game. And then what about Luis Camposano, the game that he had on Friday?
It's
just peppering the right field wall. Off of Gavin Williams and continuing to do that throughout the game and knocking him out after just 4 1/3 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned runs. I mentioned on Friday morning, like, this guy has had every start has been good other than one, like in Sacramento.
Right.
And they did to him in Cleveland that one start again. That was one of his worst, if not worst, start of the year for Gavin Williams against the San Diego Padres offense.
They were on the heater, you know, and he, the guy's an absolutely incredible pitcher. He had a game plan going in. He was missing with a lot of breaking stuff early, so these guys were able to say, all right, I'm going to stay on the heater, and they got to the heater. And he throws a good one. He throws a really, really good one. He is a number one. If they're in the playoffs, that's their number one guy. That's the guy that's going. And they beat him handily. Like, took him to the woodshed. And, you know, they were down early, but they were grinding out pretty good ABs. You looked up in the second inning, he was at 55 pitches or something. You're like, oh, okay, so this is how we're going to do it tonight. And then it kind of turned into, you know, you're like, oh, we feel like we got this game in hand a little bit.
So, yeah, but it was not over. No, I mean, it was still somewhat close.
Two-run lead, but it just felt like they once they knocked him out, it felt like, oh, man, we were winning this game.
But that led to the thing that worried everybody when Michael King was followed by Yuki Matsui for an inning. And then Jeremiah Estrada came out, and I was not surprised. I did not think we would see Adrian Morejon after what he had to do on Wednesday.
Yep.
I was pretty sure, knowing Craig Stammen, that it was going to be an off day, second off day in a row for Adrian Morejon. Just wanted to give him a little bit more rest. So that didn't surprise me. But then when Bradley Rodriguez warmed up in the bullpen in a save situation, I mean, it's a 2-run game, and it was not Mason Miller, there was definitely some concern among San Diego Padres fans. My instinct, though, which turned out to be right here, was that, no, Craig Stammen just wanted to give both guys 2 full days off. And Mason Miller had, when you look back at his, you know, game log, it had pretty much been every other day for the last 8 days. And, you know, Craig Stammen said, I know what that feels like. I've been a relief pitcher. And when you are throwing up and down every other day, that many days, you need to get a second day off somewhere. So they had made the decision before the game. They were not going to use Mason Miller on Friday night.
You know, and I saw so many people upset about it. And you know, we talked to Craig on Friday, and I said to him, yeah, man, if I'm a manager, I'm going to make decisions that I can explain and cover my own ass with. And
because, you know, we'd been talking about Toddy not starting on Wednesday.
Yeah, and he laughed. You know, he laughed, and it's a real thing. But there's a plan. And they stuck to the plan. Had that plan backfired, he's dead, man. Like, everyone's ripping him, you know, ripping them a new one today and all weekend. They were ripping them a new one after we won. Right. Like, that's the funny part. Now, the thing is, too, is like, I think we have to submit to the fact that it drives fans crazy. You're not in there, right? And obviously, they're not going to come out before the game and say, Mason Miller's not available tonight. Right. That's going to change the entire tenor of how the Cleveland Guardians play.
Yeah.
And so, he's not going to tell us that on the show. And we're going to give Mason a night off, and probably Adrian, too, to double up for him. Obviously, he's not going to say that. That's pretty good info for Steven Vogt to have. So, he's not going to say it. So, you feel a little bit in the dark. Is he hurt? What? You never know. He could have come to Craig before and said, I'm freaking gassed. I did not sleep last night. I got diarrhea. You know, you name it. Like, whatever it is. I don't feel good. You know, my cat died. You have no idea what goes on in there. And so it's hard for
also,
us.
Also, could have been like, I feel great.
I feel great.
I'm ready if you need
You're
me.
Taking
and they just said,
off.
All right, good to know. But hey, like we talked about it with the Tatis thing on Wednesday and how they've kind of done it all year. Like when they have an opportunity with a day off, if they can give a guy a couple of days, because you don't get back-to-back day offs very often in Major League Baseball. And he pretty much told us on Friday morning that, yeah, that was the plan with Toddy, and that's probably the last time the rest of the year.
Like, well, it's even more important for pitchers, you know, to occasionally have those back-to-back days off.
The thing is like, I think a lot of people, and I've been guilty of this myself. I just was with Tatis. I just was guilty of this. They're not robots. This isn't a video game. Just because there's no green bar that says 96, yeah, I'm getting him in the lineup today. I was guilty of it. I'm not even talking trash. Because I was guilty of it the series before. Like, I need my best player out there. Now, that player came off the bench. It impacted a win. So I'm going to complain about it a lot less, but it's a couple of moves that you look at and go, man, that could have backfired spectacularly. I don't look at it either as like, I saw somebody go, well, Craig is betting, you know, the house on this, and if it backfires, I'm like, yeah, but it didn't. So ultimately, it was the right decision.
Well,
because it worked, it was the right decision.
Well,
right.
And not only did it work, but it has a double benefit as well.
Correct.
Because not only do you still win the game, give your two top relievers a day off, but you have now bolstered the confidence of one young Bradley Rodriguez, who came in, gave up a hit, but bared down. And
he was gross,
I mean,
man, he is gross.
I mean, with the changeup,
if the Padres are going to move on to the playoffs, you're going to need guys like Bradley to step up. It may not be a ninth inning save; that will probably be Mason Miller. But there's going to be an intense sixth inning or whatever.
Yeah, no, the playoffs.
You're going to need those guys.
In the sixth or seventh inning, you've got closer-type mentality.
It's basically closer.
And to see him ramp it up to like 101 miles an hour. And I forget who the batter was, but it was 1-1. It was clearly a strike. And the guy's like tapping his head because he has no clue what is coming there. He is so confused by Bradley Rodriguez at that moment. Like, was that 101? I don't even know what I just saw. That was pretty nasty for Bradley Rodriguez.
I don't know what the numbers are. I feel like Cleveland is maybe the only team that's worse than the Padres at challenges.
Yeah, they were
pretty
bad.
Horrible.
Yeah,
they're
last couple of opponents, the Astros, the Diamondbacks.
Yeah. It's made me feel better as a Padres fan.
There have
fan.
Been some other bad teams as well. It wasn't just the San Diego Padres all season. And then after the game, a little conversation about Bradley, who says, you know, that is what he is wanting to do, like a future closer in Major League Baseball. And Craig Stammen echoing that, like, we think he's got closer, not just stuff, but makeup, mentality. You know, he's got that whatever you need to have.
He's
that,
got that thing,
that Trevor Hoffman, you just have.
He's got it.
And he seems to have that. Now, do the Padres need a closer in couple of years? You know, we don't know the answer to that. They've got Mason Miller right now. That job is taken. But at some point, perhaps Bradley Rodriguez will inherit that mantle of the next closer for the San Diego Padres.
Mariano Rivera used to set up for John Wetland for many years, and then he became Mariano Rivera. You know, it happened. So it was outstanding. And again, like, I just, as soon as it happened, I go, I didn't think anything like, oh, my God, he's hurt. Like, I know he wasn't hurt unless he tripped over some stairs in Cleveland or something. We didn't know. He fell down the hotel stairs. I had no idea. But, you know, obviously I just thought, okay, extra day off for him. Hope this works. And it did work to perfection.
So Padres should be fairly well set up now going.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
How worried are you about Michael King?
I mean, he bounced back
he
nicely after giving up the three runs.
Quality start.
we just have yet to see a start in which he has all of his thing.
We have.
All of
We've
his
seen two.
Working. No. I mean, the numbers have been good in a couple of the starts, but even those, he had to rely on like one or two of his good pitches. And like the third one, he still has not been able to put everything together.
I'm not overly concerned. I don't know that he goes game one for us.
Do you think now Casey Mize is your game one starter?
Potentially. But I don't know. He's just off a touch, you know, just off a tick.
And he's had a couple of games, like maybe one every like 6 weeks, where you go, okay, that's vintage Michael King.
But
like,
even looking at his numbers, even in those number starts, he always said at the end of those starts, like, yeah, I know I was very effective, but I still didn't have the feel like perfectly on a couple of the pitches. Yeah.
His
best
start was against the Dodgers in May. He went nasty. 7 innings, 4 hits, no earned runs with 9 punches.
I remember even after that start, he said, still wasn't quite back to my feels from like 2024.
That's just eyewash.
maybe, you know.
I think it is.
Not being complacent.
But no, in general, I don't think he hasn't been what we've expected from Michael King.
But very solid. Like as solid as you get, quality start, got through 6 innings, limited the damage. That's kind of all you can ask for. 3 earned runs, like, okay, that's fine. His ERA is 3.4. Like, maybe we're just getting greedy, you know, at this point. But it's, you know, when you see that pitch kind of float over the middle, and those guys are like, oh, here we go.
He did do a tremendous job, and someone brought this up over to me the weekend, of bringing Randy Vasquez on for the in-game interview as well with Michael King.
Was that this
last
series?
Week? No, last week. Yeah. When he came on and got to show some of Randy's personality, which was delightful. It was absolutely delightful to see Randy get to do some of that as well and joke around with Michael King and Don and Mudd last week. But, yeah, I'm not worried about Michael King because you know that guy is always looking, and he's like one slight adjustment away, it feels like, from being Michael King again. It's just, it's taken so long that he thought he would have found it by now, and he hasn't quite found it yet.
Yeah, and which, again, if you can do that and limit the damage and give your team 6 innings, and you know, I think maybe we're getting a little bit greedy here. Very few guys are going out there and going 7 innings, 2 hits. No, I mean, we're not, you know, Jacob Mizorowski is Jacob Mizorowski. So Michael King was effective enough to get the job done. And the offense, by the way, came out and picked him up. That's what has to happen. Well, it's going to happen.
And the Padres' formula is the starting pitcher just needs to keep it
close.
And then you've got your bullpen and you've got your late offense that has been your weapon all season long.
Yep.
So you don't have to pitch 6 shutout innings. You need to pitch 5 to 6 and give up, you know, like 2 runs.
Yeah.
And you should give the Padres a lot of chances to win.
We're in it.
Padres have won 5 out of his last 10 games that he's pitched in.
That's good.
Not quite good enough, but, you know.
He factored into 4 of those decisions, but still, you look at, you know, did they win or lose those games?
Yeah.
He's won his last 2, yep.
Right.
So Padres well set up for the series against the Mets, but they are playing well. We'll look at that a little bit later in the show. Preview the next 3 days in New York as the Padres head to the Big Apple. But when we come back, it is time for Don't and Do This. Had a very curious signing in the NFL over the weekend.
Indeed, and just the best debut that anybody could ever draw up on paper.
Probably will never be duplicated again.
It's never happened before. Probably will never happen again.
Broadcasting live from the Bill House Studios, we know how. It's Ben and Woods on a Monday morning on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
3 stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Ugh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Got Craig Elston coming up after the bottom of the hour. First, though, it is time for Don't Do This on a Monday. Woods, take it away.
Yeah, I was a little surprised when I saw this morning that the Seattle Seahawks have gone ahead and decided to sign cornerback Terrion Arnold, who was formerly with the Detroit Lions, drafted in 2024.
But they need a cornerback. They need depth at that position. What's so surprising about the signing?
Well, the fact that he is out on bail for armed robbery and kidnapping and is facing a potential life sentence is what made it a little bit jarring to me. Now, again, he did submit a not guilty plea. He's out on bail. He is free to pursue football right now. But if things. It's odd to me. Like, if you had told me, so the Lions have decided to keep him, and I would say, and put him on the, you know, the restricted or pup list or whatever, the whatever maneuvering you want to do. It makes sense to me. Well, they drafted him. They're going to stand by the kid. The fact that they caught him, Seattle's like, well, we'll take him. I mean, Paulie made it. We talked about it in before the show. He's like, what if the Padres were like, let's sign Wander Franco. You never know, right? You never know, just in case. Like
we would be outraged. We'd be I think everybody spinning would. Our wheels.
But, you know, they're going to see how it plays out in the legal world. And if, you know, if they're like, yeah, we don't have enough evidence to convict him on these four charges of kidnapping and armed robbery.
I was going to say, even Wander Franco or this guy up in Seattle, there's going to be one fan at least that's like, hey, seems pretty smart to me. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very odd. So that kind of made sense if they kept him, but it didn't make sense. You could still sign it. I think they didn't want everybody rushing to sign him if he was not guilty or, you know, they.
It makes their offer stand out.
Correct.
Because he's getting it right now as opposed to waiting
That's
for
right.
the legal process to play out.
Exactly. Very odd, man. Very odd. Now, you know, again, this is the nature of sports. It's not the first time, it's not the last time. You make a lot of concessions to win. Mm-hmm. A lot of concessions to win. Even if you're the defending Super Bowl champion.
All right, let's have two doo-doo thises this week instead of...
D-D mega doo-doo.
Two don't do thises. I want to start. Congratulations to Sweetwater Valley Little League.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was back on Friday night, but they did it. They beat Kauai Hawaii 11-3 to claim the West Region Championship. And advance to the Little League World Series this week in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Noah Kirk, who is Alejandro Kirk's nephew, I'm told, struck out 7. Isaac Martinez hit a grand slam in the 11-3 win. Seeing them celebrate there on the screen. Chula Vista, Bonita, that area is just one of the great hotbeds for Little League in this country. This is the second time Sweetwater Valley has made it to the Little League World Series. They did it back in 2015. Of course, we've had the great Parkview, Chula Vista teams that have gone in the past as well, and they will begin play on Thursday with their first game against Davenport, Iowa. It'll begin, I believe, at 3 o'clock our time in their first game. And for those just south of the border who may be listening, Tijuana Municipal Little League also made it, and they will begin on Thursday morning as well at 9. So we actually have two local teams out of the 20 worldwide teams that have made it.
That's amazing.
Two of them are probably, as the crow flies, 15 miles away from each other?
Yep.
Pretty awesome and incredible, and good luck to Sweetwater Valley at the Little League World Series.
It's actually quite intimidating to run a baseball program and watch those kids play. It's quite intimidating. I spent an inordinate amount of time thinking.
You watch that and think, Bo's 2 years away from that.
Right. What are they, 12?
10 to 12.
10 to 12?
12-year-olds is the max.
Okay.
Generally, you fill teams at this level with a lot of 12-year-olds, a couple of 11-year-olds.
He's almost 9. So.
Yeah.
Need to hire him a better coach, is what I'm thinking right now. No, it was incredible. I watched most of the game. I'm so soft now because I was rooting for them, obviously. But, man, I find myself feeling very upset for the kids that give up the grand slams. And when the coach comes out, your heart breaks for him because you know how much time and effort it takes to go into it. And
the kid for Hawaii that was pitching, and he hit a home run. His team, he did all he could.
Yeah, man.
And yet his team was losing when he got pulled for the pitch count. And he, as soon as the coach got the ball from him, he just broke down.
It felt like me.
You know, he felt like he let his team down, even though he hit the big home run to try to get him back in it. He did everything he could.
You're so close.
I felt so bad.
You've gotten one game away from
Williamsport.
It's getting there is the real prize. I mean, that's as far as you can get.
That's it.
Yeah. You know, then you get to spend the week in the dorms and having fun, and they just treat you like royalty. So that is the toughest place to possibly lose, is in that regional championship.
When the coach comes out and he's like, hey, you're good. You're good. It just murders me every time. But again, was rooting hard for them. They made it. Congratulations to them. We got one more doo-doo this.
D-D mega doo-doo.
I think this is a, in your wildest dreams, you know, you get called up to the big leagues and you just don't embarrass yourself in your first game, right? That's kind of all you're hoping for. Like, I'll take a first pitch, 6-hopper to the shortstop. I don't want to strike out looking. I don't want to pull a grand poly and foul a ball off my face and swing at a ball in the dirt. I just don't want to embarrass myself. I want to look like I belong. Well, St. Louis Cardinals outfielder Joshua Baez certainly looked like he belonged, Ben, when he hit not one, not two, but three home runs in his major league debut.
In his first three at-bats. The very first pitch he saw in the big league.
It's just,
and it wasn't a cheapie either.
No, dude. It was unbelievable. His baseball cards went from like $110 autograph to like $1,100 over like that day. They went up. I was monitoring it on my phone. I couldn't believe it. But it was exceptional. And he had been in the minors for a while, and he came up and showed right away he belonged. But then I started thinking, well, is every game after this just like there's nowhere to go but down? This just doesn't happen to anybody.
You have to at least consider retiring immediately after the first game, right?
Yeah.
And just creating a legend, like living on the legend the rest
for
of your
the
life.
The rest of your life.
I think he probably wants to see how far he can take his big league career.
What's the audio we have from that, Paulie?
I got a video of him after the game. He was talking about his father, who's no longer with us, but how he had dreams of being a major leaguer and the message that he left with his father. It was really touching.
I know you dealt with some hard stuff with your family over the last couple of years. What's the meaning of that today, of being here today and being able to show those folks that you're here?
I don't want to get too much, into it, but, like, my dad, his dream was to play in the big leagues, and, like, he never got to sign or anything. And the only promise that I made to him was that I was going to be able to do that for him. And he's not here with us here, but he's in spirit, and I know he's so proud of me.
He talked to me.
So he was there in spirit, and we'll talk about the spirit of his father.
I'd like to do that at 8 o'clock. Maybe.
8 o'clock, we will get back
it
to
was
that.
Beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Stunning. Touching. Yeah. And incredible. And I know everyone on this show will certainly feel the same.
By the way, that has never happened in 125 years of big league baseball. A guy hitting three home runs in his
may never
first three
debuts. Yeah. They listed kind of the 10 greatest debuts, and of course I remember well October 15th, 1892. Bumpus Jones threw a no hitter in his big league debut, which is pretty cool. He walked four, he allowed an unearned run, but zero hits for Bumpus Jones.
We need to bring the name Bumpus back.
I couldn't
a little
agree
bit
more.
There's not enough Bumpuses in our elementary schools.
Could not agree more. Plenty of Brixtons and Braxtons, but there's not enough Bumpus. Bumpus Woods. Just incredible, man.
And
just to hit one home run in major league debut is nuts.
And that is Don't and Do This for a Monday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, when we come back, Craig Elston will join us on a Monday. SDFC's big win and his Padres hot tub thoughts on a series victory over the Cleveland Guardians. All coming up next year on 97.3 The Fan. Ben and Woods brought to you by David P. Shapiro, criminal defense attorneys, helping good people regain control of their future when charged with a crime since 2010. Visit DavidPShapiroLaw.com. Let's get our first guest of the week online. Go out to our SDCCU fan hotline. We are joined by the host of the Padres Hot Tub Cromaniacs podcast, Craig Elston, with us. And Craig, it was a very good weekend for both of our teams, SDFC and the San Diego Padres, including a really much-needed road win for SDFC on Saturday night at LAFC. Stole one from LAFC at the end there, Craig.
Absolutely did. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, buddy.
That was the win of the year so far for San Diego FC. And you always want to say so far because you hope that there are tons of bigger and better experiences for the Cromados going forward. But BMO Stadium, a place where LAFC has the best home record in MLS since they came into the league, where this year they had lost one MLS match in 8 tries. And to go out there and in 10 tries, pardon me, and to go out there and take care of business. Honestly, as we were getting ready for the Cromaniacs postgame show on Saturday, I was thinking to myself throughout the final, 20 minutes of the game that it was going to be one of those unique broadcasting challenges to explain why a 0-0 draw was like one of the most important and best results and best played games that SDFC had all season long. And then, quite thankfully, LAFC's excellent center back just lost his mind. Threw his hand out there like one of those crazy waving balloons at the
car dealership,
at the auto dealership. Yeah, exactly. And just throws it out there and gets the handball and the obvious obvious pen. A little unfortunate that Anders Dreyer decided to go Brandi Chastain on us because then he had to commit a really important tactical foul later. And so now he's going to be out for Wednesday at Portland. You know, that could potentially be a really big loss to the lineup for a team that really needs to keep their momentum going. But this was a huge step in the right direction, guys. And to see Achiuri out there, to know that they did it without Thorhalsen, who got a chance to rest. He'll probably feature, prominently on Wednesday. Very exciting, the direction of this club. First time in a while, you could really say that.
Yeah, the panic, you know, sets in towards the end, and then you realize, okay, we are finally out. Like, the extra time is going to run its course. And it was such a good feeling, Craig. But you, did you go up for the game, or did you watch it here?
No, I had to stay back for Cro-Maniac's post-game show. I was invited on the supporters bus, but if you're on that supporters bus, you're not going to be right to podcast.
I heard it got a little wild. I heard, you know, I saw some videos. I mean, it's a true rivalry, and I think it's expressed by, unlike the Dodgers, they won't admit it. LAFC admits it. I mean, this is so far.
And they haven't won yet.
They haven't won yet.
SKFC's 3-0-1 now in four matches against LAFC. That's
pretty incredible.
Pretty unlikely for an expansion team there, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, take that, right? You know, it's completely unlikely. But let's be clear. We've got two LA rivals now, because Chuki FC is coming in a couple of Friday or a couple of Saturdays,
dude.
Down here. That's going to be the match. Yeah,
pace yourself that day. Pace yourself.
Yeah. How mad/disappointed should we be in Anders for the, as you said, needless yellow card for taking his shirt off in celebration? I'm sure he thought game was pretty much over. What is his stupid yellow card? Because he knows, right, that that's a yellow card. That's just an automatic yellow.
Yes.
So
yeah, everyone knows. Yeah.
And so it was really, I mean, he wouldn't have done it if he had already had a yellow card, obviously, because he's smart enough to not do it. But as you said, then he had to take the tactical foul and will miss an important match on Wednesday.
Yeah, and it's tough, you know, because obviously Anders Dreyer, I thought it was interesting on the Apple TV broadcast that they were talking about him as a potential MVP candidate in the league. I think from San Diegans' myopic perspective of only seeing ourselves, we're like, oh, Anders has had a down year compared to last year. But last year, honestly, if Messi doesn't exist, he's the runaway MVP. Yeah. He had a great year in the history of the league with close to 40 goal contributions. This year, Anders has been the constant point of focus for the other team's defense. And it has really put him into an assist-only mode for a lot of games. I'm going to be very, very curious, because on Wednesday now, without Dreyer, does that mean Achiuri starts? Does that mean the offense starts to run through him a little bit more? Can they get Marcus Ingvartsson a little bit more involved? He's been a little bit off since the break. These are going to be the key questions for the Chroma Azul to answer Wednesday up at Portland.
All right, how about this? Anders Dreyer getting MVP votes. How about Luis Renjifo getting MVP votes for your San Diego Padres? Holy crap. I lay in bed at night and think, where would we be without one Luis Renjifo? It's big hit after big hit. It's been pretty incredible, Craig. And really the whole squad, man, and 1 through 9 contributing. And you know, sometimes the big dogs don't have it. The smaller dogs come in and eat for everybody. It was a really great series, I thought. To beat Gavin Williams was exceptional. I've watched him pitch this year. He's nasty. His numbers say he's nasty. He's a one, and they took it to him.
This team has raised their level. You know, they truly have. And this was the team that I thought this Padres team was going to be at the beginning of the year. And it took them 4 months to become the team that I thought at the beginning they would be, a team with an excellent offense, a team with a deep offense, a team with that is led by two of the best outfielders in the National League in Fernando Tatis Jr. and Jackson Merrill. And, you know, yes, Luis Renjifo, you know, the spell that was cast whenever Samad Taylor came up to, like, turn Quad A into All-Star, you know. It just appeared to pass over to Renjifo once Taylor got hurt. I hope it keeps going. I mean, he's well over 100 at-bats of hitting like Milton Bradley did, basically, with just a little less power. If people remember that incredible 2007 burst.
Keep Bud Black away from Luis Renjifo.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying. And thank you for understanding it, Ben. That is actually the message I wanted to deliver this morning. Keep your hands off my Renhifo, buddy Black. We don't need any ninjutsu moves here, pal. But yeah, it's really great to see. And we were talking about it on last night's Padres Hot Tub. To see a lineup, first of all, that's a lineup that's not changing every 3 days, that has guys in roles that they're comfortable with and essentially assigned to. And, you know, in particular, Tatis, obviously, leading off, playing incredible. Cronenworth has been good since coming back from the All-Star break and from concussion. He's not incredible, but he's been good. Machado, honestly, has been terrible the last three, four weeks. And the team is still succeeding because France is locked in at four. Merrill is locked in at five. And guys, Luis Camposano.
Unbelievable.
I mean, this was the I kind of got on a little bit of a thing on the show last night, but it just blows my mind because I feel like in at least 25 other major league cities, people would be talking about Luis Camposano like, oh my God, this guy is a core piece of our present and our future.
Yeah.
How many catchers can have a 158 WRC plus? Like he has today, you know, hit to slash 300, 400, 500, like he is doing right now. This is Mike Piazza stuff with just a little less in terms of the slug. And nobody was like, well, you know, Mike Piazza's good, but hang on. In a year, we're going to replace him.
Right.
You know, we've got something better coming up. And I got a lot of, I don't want to build a straw man, but there was at least this decent discussion in our Padres Hot Tub Discord this week about like, well, should you call up Salas? And I'm like, no, like this is Campy's job. Fermin is playing well. This is the classic Family Guy. Like, oh, well, what's in the box? We've got a boat, but what's in the box? It might be a boat, you know?
Right.
Like this is what you want as a hitting catcher. It's a unique thing in baseball. Almost nobody has it. And I just really want to put some shine on Luis Camposano. Like at the beginning of this year, most people had written him off. And we did an episode saying like, you've got to give this guy a full chance to prove himself in the big leagues. And, you know, major kudos to Craig Stammen, to the coaching staff, to AJ Preller for finally, after putting him in this like 2 year jail of Mike Schilt's lack of confidence or maybe borderline hatred for the guy to just give him a smile and a pat on the back and affirmation. And he has turned out to be one of the best and most important players on this team. If he stays healthy, he's a star in this league. He's not just okay. He's a star in this league. So I'm just really, really excited and really happy for him to see all the hard work where 2 years ago he was banished in this organization. He's killing AAA and they're like, nope, we're never going to call you up. We're going to trade two starters for Freddie Fermin instead of calling you up. Like we wouldn't dare call you up. And now he's finally got somebody to believe in him. And he's proving something that we knew years ago when he won the Cal League batting title. This guy can really swing it.
Padres Hot Tub host Craig Elston on our SDCCU fan hotline. It's not big bank banking. It's better. And I've been kind of toying with this in my mind the last week or two, and I want to ask you, Craig, did we miss something? Because we all pretty much had said, this Padres team just doesn't have it this year. We don't know why, but they just don't have it. Did we miss something that this was still in them capable? I mean, what?
I did.
What was your thoughts? And is there something we need to do better as fans/media when covering this team?
Baseball is such a tough sport, Ben, and you know it as well as anybody, and you as well, Woodsy and Paul. Like, this game delivers more false information than any sport in the world. You can be fooled for months, but I don't think we were all crazy. We were all just watching what we saw. The Jackson Merrill that hits 198 with a 42% chase rate and is on pace for 180 strikeouts, the Fernando Tatis Jr. who has four home runs in 95 games, the Manny Machado who at midseason has one of the bottom five batting averages in all of Major League Baseball. These players are almost putting us through Job-style trials, of like, oh, you want to believe in us? Well, what if we go 3 months without hitting?
Right.
What if we go 3.5 months without hitting? Do you still believe? And then they turn it around. You know, the biggest thing I would just truly say is that Maryland Tatis have powered this turnaround. Those are the young core in their prime stars of this team. And their turnaround has fueled the offense's turnaround. So we all knew they had something more in them. I think all of us knew that they had more in them than what they had provided. But you start to wonder when you're getting to the 350 at bat mark, like, is this just a lost season? Is this just one of those years where you just go, I don't know why, but he didn't have it. But they have, and they've turned it around. And guys, for all the talk we had earlier of 2021 pitching collapse or 2023, it just doesn't come together. Now it feels like 2024, but with more danger. So it really feels like a sequel because they're not safe. Like, just dropping one series is enough to potentially put you out of the playoff bracket right now. The line keeps going up. The pace is accelerating in the race. It feels like they will have to win 87, 88, 89, 90 games to get into the playoffs. And I think they can. I really think this team has turned the corner.
Yeah, I just still scarred from 2023 where I insisted all season long that this team was going to turn it around.
They haven't
They're
played
going
their best
to get
baseball.
It going. Haven't played their best baseball yet. And then they never really did.
Yep.
And I have never forgotten that.
Never
recovered. This year, it was finally like, okay, I've learned my lesson from 2023. This team doesn't have it. I'm not going to continue to insist that they can turn it around. And then they turned it around.
Of course they did.
All right. Well, Craig, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob.
We'll see what happens over these next 7 days. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Can't wait, fellas. Take care.
Thanks, man.
There he is, Craig Elston, host of the Padres Hot Tub Cro-Maniacs podcast and our weekly contributor. Here on
I'm glad Craig took a minute there to specifically give Campy his flowers. I don't think he's gotten enough this year. I texted you guys on Friday, though. He had a great game on Friday night, but he made me mad.
Campy made you mad.
He made me mad because I started thinking, I let myself go there where I started thinking, if they would have just played him in 2024, maybe he could have been the guy that got the one hit that they might have needed. And that team, you never know what happens if they just score a run in 2024. And it just made me mad that we had a guy that refused to play him. Refused to give him a chance.
You know, you just never
know. I got
know.
Pissed off all over
again. I know he can't be. I give, of course, Stammen and AJ and all those guys for sticking by him. But the work was put in by Luis Camposano. And he had a lot to do mentally. He had a lot to do to get back to those, get back in the good graces to earn that chance. And signed him to a one-year $1 million deal or something. And we all went, all right, this is
last
it.
Chance.
Like, last shot.
Yep.
And he's played incredibly well. And that AB, when he went to right the other day, was just such a thing. It looked like vintage Manny, actually. I'd like to see that from Manny eventually again.
And don't forget, as Woods told us, a couple spring trainings ago now, Luis Camposano, the best
good.
Smelling big leaguer.
You've never smelled
he's
him.
He's ever encountered.
Never. You've never smelled anyone that smells as good as him. Ever. Male, female, it doesn't matter. He's number one on my list.
All right, we'll come back. Take on Woods, Dennis Lynn, busy third hour. Ben Woods next on The Fan.